Hey, what's good? What's good? What's good? Welcome to Reflections of a DJ, the Roll podcast presented by DJ City and Beat Source. I am one of your hosts, DJ Crooked. We got Jamie the Great here.
Yeah.
Shout out to Big Never, Never Forever.
Yes.
We have a special co-host here. We got my man Marco Pinta in the building.
What up? What up?
What's good? And we have this DJ I have here as a guest today. You know, I've been wanting him on the podcast for a minute.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whenever you come to New York, you know, you'll probably see him out and about DJing in the club. He works probably 8 nights a week. You know,
he basically sleeps there.
You know, he's always working. I don't, you know, he's stacking all these gigs. He's at every hot club ever. And you know, he's the most likable, humble DJ. Sweet. I would say on the East Coast, he is the most likable DJ on the East Coast. And I could be wrong. And then I think, you know, the West Coast is maybe DJ Spider. I don't know. It's between these two on who's the more likable.
And we hang out, actually, every so often.
Who's the nicest?
We're nationally the most liked, the most humble liked DJs.
Yeah. And, humble off.
And honestly, whenever I go out of town, anywhere I go, it could be Texas, it could be, you know, anywhere I go, they'll be like, oh, you know Neil Jackson? I'd be like, yes, yep. I know Neil Jackson. And that's what we have today. We have Neil Jackson in the building. What's good?
The peacemaker.
What's good,
fam? I'm nervous, to be honest.
Really?
I am.
You have your own podcast. Yeah, you're like a, you know, you do like, you do all these things on social media. You speak to the people.
But I feel like
you sell coffee.
You guys have an official podcast. We just have like a few dudes.
You have a group chat?
Hey, yo.
Wow. Hey, yo. A few dudes.
No. I'm so glad to have you here. We could talk about it. You know, we were doing research on you, and I didn't know you're from L.A.
I am.
But I always sensed there was something weird about you.
What? In what way, Kirk?
Because he doesn't have a New York energy.
No.
But he knows New York lingo.
You feel me?
Well.
Yeah, of course. But
you know, the crazy thing is you moved out of New York the same time I moved to New York. Almost the same year.
No. It says that you moved in 2002.
Yeah. When did you move?
I moved in like 2006. 05. Yeah, like end of 05.
Okay.
Yeah, but I don't know.
I was still trying to get my bearings when I moved here.
I didn't know where you DJed. Yeah, I didn't hear about you until I came back.
Yeah, at that time, I actually wasn't DJing because that was around the same time that Serato wasn't out yet. So yeah. When I moved to New York, it was just because I just needed to change.
Were you ever on vinyl? Did you DJ vinyl?
I DJed since the eighth grade.
Okay.
So I DJed even before my vinyl days was a tape deck and a CD player.
I always thought of you as a New York, like DJ, a New York dude. And then I was just, but something was like off. I was like, he doesn't seem.
It doesn't click.
Like a New York. Yeah, he's just way too.
Too nice.
Yeah, he's just too like chill. Like he has that Cali West Coast chill factor.
Yeah. Yeah.
But now I know why.
Yeah,
now
no.
Now I know why.
My.
Now I know what's wrong with you.
I knew there was something off.
Now
but
you
I
know
just
why he's like
out.
Spider. You're like, kind of clear.
Well, I was doing research. I was telling Jamie, I'm like, oh, this guy's like that. What do you call those dudes that like switch over the gangs? They're like their blood
hopper.
And they're, yeah, he's a hood hopper.
You know, the crazy thing is I grew up in Pomona, California.
And oof,
P-town.
All the Mexicans are there.
Dude,
what is your background?
Yeah, we had all gangs. But the thing was, is for me, I was always the music kid, and all the kids that we grew up with all turned into gangs. And so I was the one who had the pass that was able to move.
Yeah, he was the one that would walk down the street.
I could move without having
yeah, don't fuck with
anybody.
Neil. He's going to be somewhere. He going to go to college out this little music show.
He's protected.
This
he's
music
protected.
Thing is going to get him out of here, and that's exactly what it did.
Don't fuck with Neil, dog. Let Neil walk by.
You're going to limits.
Hey, man, he's cool, man. That's Neil Jackson, man.
The little guy said drums.
Man, I did everybody's cookouts. I did everybody's house parties. I did all of that.
He's the kid with the only kid with the guitar, bro. Just let him be, dog. Let him walk by.
Wait, so where did you get this, I don't know, this really kind of laid back, everything's
Pomona,
love.
Pomona, California,
like, you know.
Bro.
No. Like, is it from your parents, your mom's?
It was from my mom.
Yeah?
My mom was always the peacekeeper amongst our household.
Wait, what's your nationality? I'm sorry.
So I'm Black, Hawaiian, Chinese, Japanese.
Wow.
Oh, mixture.
Yeah.
What were you raised like predominantly as? Is there like a dominant, you know?
That's the thing. My parents kind of just.
It was a blend.
Yeah.
Okay. Usually, like, if they're divorced, you're raised one way, right? Like one side a little bit.
No. They were.
Wait. So, what was your mom and what was your dad?
My mom was Hawaiian, Chinese, Japanese from Hawaii.
Right.
Moved to San Francisco when she graduated high school. Dad's from Chicago and then moved out and they met at a party in South Central LA.
Bro, black dudes from Chicago moved to LA.
Yeah.
Like it's some thing. I don't know. It happens in the 80s.
It's called the winter.
Oh, yeah.
They realized that the winter in California is way different than the winter in Chicago.
Yeah.
Never went back.
I get it. Chicago's the worst.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Chicago's the worst. And as we speak, it's snowing here in New York.
Yes.
Snowing and raining.
Yeah. Jamie has never experienced
snow. I never experienced snow like this, gentlemen.
I could tell because you're wearing New Balance.
Yes. I was trying to be comfortable when I walked out here.
I told these motherfuckers, I said, watch. I said, all the guests that come in today are going to wear boots.
Yeah.
Except Marco.
He's bougie. He drives, bro. He can actually find parking.
I joke.
So wait. All right. So you grew up in Pomona.
Yeah.
And then you were kind of DJing along the way. I'm sure you did like probably high school dances. You did like college shit out there or what happened?
So my very first gig was my eighth grade prom. And
right.
From there, at that summer, Juice came out.
Right.
I didn't know what DJing was. Juice came out. I snuck into the movie theater maybe about 10 times in a week trying to watch this movie. I was like, that's what I want to do.
Mm.
You know, I was playing the eighth grade prom. I was playing from a tape deck, a realistic mixer, and a CD player, like a CD Walkman.
Concoction.
And then I was like, that's what I want to do. And so I practiced. And then one of my friends' older brother was one of the DJs for like a lot of like open mics, like rap battles and stuff. And so he DJed for like AC Alone. Well, they were called Freestyle Fellowship at the time. And he kind of mentored me. So that's what I did was underground hip hop stuff. And then
so you were DJing rap battles in LA? Yeah.
Where at?
Well, in Walnut, California.
Oh.
So I was in the suburbs at the time.
Yeah, he was in the burbs.
Where the fuck is Walnut?
Walnut's like Rancho Cucamonga, the area.
It's more like West Covina.
Yeah.
Mm. It's just east of West Covina.
Your bio says that you were DJing rap battles hosted by the Far Sign and Black Eyed Peas.
Yeah.
With Young Will.i.am.
Yep. But they were called Atban Clan at the time. So this is pre Black Eyed Peas.
Oh wow.
So Will, Taboo and all of them, they were a dance crew. They weren't even really a rap.
They were just girls everywhere, right? No?
No.
Absolutely.
It was me and his boys, bro.
Yeah, like, no, it was just a gang of dudes.
That's
dancing
what you just
in a circle.
Learned. The way you learn to pick up shorties over there at those rap battle parties with Black Eyed Peas and Far Side.
Yeah, no. There was like three girls and like a coffee shop full of dudes dancing in circles. Nice. So
I just pictured it like 8 Mile.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It kind of was, actually. It kind of was. But then I started doing like radio promotions, like college radio promotions, because I just wanted to get free records. And that's when I met Vice.
So wait, what radio were you
that on? That was during high school.
I've always wondered how you and Vice were connected.
Oh, because, so when you were asking me about high school dances, like me, Vice, Cheap Shot, all of us, we were DJing high school dances and house.
Wait, how did you know Vice? Vice is from Eagle Rock and you're from Pomona. That's about 30, 40 minutes indifference.
So a long time ago, they still have a crew called DBS, and they were trying to, I found out about a party.
What does that stand
throwing.
For?
Yeah, what is DBS?
The Boys. It's just like a bunch of childhood friends.
It all comes back to boys, man.
It's just a gang of dudes. It literally is a gang of dudes.
Fuck girls, man. Girls suck.
Yeah, we didn't.
Woman hater club.
They complicate things. No, they. So
don't let your girlfriend hear that.
So they were throwing a party, and I met him at a party that he was DJing, and I was promoting records. And my job was to go around to all the local DJs giving out records. Really, it was because I wanted free records.
Yeah.
He was doing it for MCA, so we just started trading records, and we just became friends from then.
Oh, that's
great. But we were all, they threw the party because they were trying to get free tuxes for their prom.
Hmm.
So we were all trying to work the system.
Wow, so you've known Vice and Cheap Shot and all those guys?
Since high school.
Wow, that's crazy.
Yeah. His parents hated me.
So were you DJing?
Why?
Because I always try to get them to sneak out to go network. I mean, we were trying to get into the club scene at the time.
Oh, so you were like the problem child.
Yeah.
Like you were getting, yeah.
It didn't help you were black. You know? Vice is Mexican. And they're like,
hated me.
Jesus Christ.
So,
wait, so were you DJing in any spots in LA or in Pomona before you came to New York?
Not during high. Oh, yeah, yeah. So I was, I was in the Asian scene at the time. Mm. So I did the Palace. There was this club called Sky Sushi that doesn't exist anymore. Arena does still.
Mm-hmm.
But
Arena was around since back then.
Wait.
Oh, dude.
No, hold on, Crooked. There's two arenas. The one on Santa Monica?
Yeah.
The gay club.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes. Okay, so there's two arenas, Krieger. There's one that's it's pretty big. It's maybe an acre, and there's two clubs. There was Circus in the back, which is the gay club, and then the arena was this big, like, warehouse-looking, like, club. But now arena that you know of, that's a different
That's
a different era of arena.
Okay, okay.
Yeah, I'm talking about the OG arena. That OG thing has been around forever.
But that was an Asian club, or no?
Well, no. So, like, the Asian scene would take over clubs that already existed.
They would have their Asian night.
Yes. Yeah. Florentine Gardens, Palaces.
I don't know if Palace is still open. Florentine Gardens.
No, it's
still
a club now, but it's called something else. It's across the street from the Capitol building.
So, like, you were playing what? What were you playing, like, for these Asians?
It's like
for these Asians. Was mainly Filipino, or was it?
It was mainly Filipino.
Right.
So, like, back then it was me, the Beat Junkies, Icy Ice.
Oh, wow.
Ice.
Oh, so you're part of that whole scene.
That whole scene.
Wow.
That was like, that was what was running. Beat Junkies was just everywhere.
Right.
So, you know, shout out to Ice, Melody, all those dudes. But
So, like, what made you want to come to New York? What made you move? That's big move.
Yeah. Across the country.
I'm like one of those guys that just kind of gets an idea and I just, like, run with it.
But what was the idea?
The idea was, I used to work in the skateboarding industry.
Mm-hmm. Oh, sure.
And at the time, I had gotten laid off and for about a year and a half.
What were you doing for skateboards?
I was doing, like, marketing.
Okay.
Like, for Globe. I was working for a bunch of... I was interning at Quicksilver. I was interning at a bunch of spots.
You was in the skate scene as well?
I was in the streetwear scene, skateboard scene. Mm. Like, I was just in the streets. I was in the streets back then.
So, like, wait, that Jonah Hill movie of the mid-90s, that was like you? That was your life?
Pretty much.
Really?
I mean, I gotta remember that movie, but I kind of, pretty much.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting. All right, so then you came to New York.
I came into New York. The reason why I came was because in California we were having a job issue. Like, everyone was getting laid off, and this is when Arnold Schwarzenegger was claiming to bring jobs back to California. I had left at that time. I just gave my parents an ultimatum. I was like, either the military or New York. So my dad was in the military. He's like, just go to New York. So me, Vice, Chalk, like a bunch of us. Eric V from the Baker Boys, we threw a going away party at a soon to be strip club. My buddy gave me the keys to it, and I just made a bunch of money off of it. Bought my ticket the next day, and I just, like, couch surfed for 6 months.
How much did you make?
About like $5,000.
That's pretty good.
Yeah,
and that time that's about like $15,000.
Yeah, I mean, we killed it in Beverly Hills. We packed the hell out of that place.
That's like what, like 6 months rent if you're lucky in New York, maybe. Five months?
Yeah, at the time.
At the time?
Yeah.
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 But luckily, I had two friends here, and they both lived together, and he was just like, just sleep on the couch until you get on your feet.
Nice.
So I bar backed for like two or three years.
Wow.
Yeah.
And wait, where did you bar back? Anywhere?
It's actually still here. It's called Bar 169.
Mm.
But under new ownership now.
So you didn't know what you wanted to do. You didn't know if you wanted to DJ. You didn't know.
No. So that was around the time Serato wasn't out yet. So I was like, there's no, man.
You're not bringing your records, right?
To you, Crooked, I don't know how you did it. I don't know how DJs used to lug records in New York.
Yeah.
There was no way I was doing that. I wasn't bringing my records over here. I was not trying to carry that shit in the subway system. In the subway system.
I never carried in the subway. Yeah.
you have a trick. You have a trick to, well, like, even a taxi cab you would
when
order.
I was in Spanish Harlem, I lived in a five floor walk up.
Oh, hell no.
Wow.
So, you know what I'm saying? It was a five floor walk up. And I mean, what really saved us was gypsy cabs.
Ah.
Yeah.
Because I could bargain with a gypsy cab. I could get a less fare. And they could take me, you know, uptown to downtown. And then, you know, everything was probably in the Village at that time.
Yeah.
And I was getting paid maybe $100 to do a whole night. And I was bringing, like, you know, like, I don't know, probably 4 crates.
Damn.
But I was just talking to somebody about this. And I was like, I would bring 4 crates and milk crates. And then I'd you know, I remember we were talking about Serato, because it's like, if you met a shorty afterwards, they'd be like, yo, let's hang out. And then they would end up leaving.
Yeah.
Well, they would end up leaving because they see you with all these records.
You're like, yo, help me out real quick.
And then you're loading, like, the trunk, and it's just not sexy. And then they're just kind of like, well,
He's not as big as I thought he was.
I was talking to somebody. They said like they were loading the crates. They turned around and she disappeared.
That's a magic trick right there, boy.
But you know, like if they were a real one, if they helped you load the trunk. And then I knew if they were a real one, if they were like helping me up the stairs.
Five, bro.
They're like struggling in this dress.
At high heels.
Like, this better be worth it.
I remember there was a shorty that like.
Or you got to warn them like, yo, this is going to be worth it.
Yeah. You're going to get this 12 inch.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I remember I was like unloading the crates and I was taking, like I took one and then I was like, yo, like I'll be right back. And when I went downstairs, she had two. She was,
what?
She was walking up with two.
She's
and I was like,
buff.
Yeah. I was like, yo, I got to wipe this one off.
Yo, that, you know Stacy with the strong back?
Stacy.
I did end up wiping her off. I'm like, yo.
Strong ass Stacy.
Yeah.
Hashtag.
You got some strong.
The way she just, you feel protected and shit.
I mean, the worst was like, I remember I was DJing at Pangea and it would start snowing. And it was like,
how far was that from your house?
I mean, that's Lafayette from 102nd Lex. Yeah, that's pretty far.
Far.
About 40 minutes.
Yeah, but they, you know, I got paid, but it was like always that thing when it snowed or New Year's Eve was the worst because it's impossible to get a taxi on New Year's.
And there
after
was
New
no
Year's.
Uber. Zero
and
Uber.
And cold as fuck, and you're standing in the middle of the street, and everyone's stealing your cab because as soon as you get a cab, and you're trying to load the trunk, someone just hops in the back seat and they take your fucking cab.
And to put a little more onto that, like his cold, like back then and the cold now are very different.
Two different colds.
I moved here in the middle of winter in 2002 and that cold is way colder than it is right now.
Or maybe you just got
I think that was just your first cold.
Yeah.
It was 2 degrees.
Bro, did you
it's
see how
cold?
Oh yeah. It would be cold like that.
Yeah, 2 degrees is a lot.
Yeah, I had to like look. I was like, okay, I moved here on 2 degrees. That is the marker right there.
Not only that, back then also like the cabs, like sometimes they roll down the window, be like, where are you going? And if it was far, they just drive off.
Yeah. Oh, that's still
brutal.
Still going on right now.
Yo, fam, like cabs was a big problem back then. They would ditch you. Like, and it was like you saw like actual racism. Like MoMA, I've never seen MoMA lose his cool except with taxis.
Damn.
There were times where, like, this is always with MoMA. It would be me, MoMA, and 11, and, like, our homie Philippe or, like, Sean. It would be me and Sean hailing the cab, and MoMA would have to hide.
I'm not fucking with you, but it's true. But you are very right. I remember, like, watching on the news that there was, like, a big thing about it that they were like, yo, cabs are being racist.
Yeah.
No
like,
way.
There was like a whole campaign behind that.
Yeah.
He's the nicest guy from all of you guys.
Yeah. No, I remember. I remember there was one time where it was like MoMA was hiding and it was me and Mo.
Poor Mo.
And then I opened the door and then Mo like came out from the shadows.
He was hiding between two other cars, like boom.
You just like leave the door open and he just like dived in.
And then the cab saw Mo and drove and was taking off, and Mo was so infuriated. It was it took forever to get the cab. I think Mo like ripped the side mirror off.
Allegedly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then I looked and I was like, "Whoa, that's the side of you." He was like,
"Because it was like Stacy."
Well, yo, that was
Stacy with the strong back. Get him.
Yeah. Yeah. They literally had to pass a law because of that.
Yeah. That was a fucked
that's
up.
That's cold.
Time.
As
it was.
Guys.
Yeah. I mean, we laugh about it now, but it was really, really.
It was really bad.
Fucked up. Like they, like Channel 7 News, they would do these reports. And they would show, like, you know, a black person and then, like, a white person. And the cab would just drive by the black person and go to the white person.
No, I think I saw that. I think I saw the exact same story.
But the great thing that happened was after Uber kind of went out, the cab started stopping for everybody.
Of course. They were running out of fucking.
I remember when Uber came out and Mo, and I was, like, linking up with Mo. And he's like, bro, This is a great time for New York right now.
I got my revenge.
It's like, I can get a cab anytime I want.
Like, watch this. I'm going to call two.
He's like,
I don't even need two.
They're both here.
He's like, bro, they're taking me to Queens, man. He's
like, SUV, baby. Deluxe.
He's like, yo, they're taking me to Queens, bro.
First Obama, now this?
Yeah, I got my DJ bag in one cab, and I'm in the other. And it's going, we're going to meet. We're going to meet at the same location.
Oh. No wonder fucking New York DJs be mad, bro. You just have to deal with some shit, guys.
Man, they're everywhere. Wild. Yeah. Yeah. So you came to, like right after 9/11?
Yeah.
And then, like, the
right after the blackout. So it was 9/11, blackout. Yeah.
Oh.
And then I came. And the funny thing is, the blackout was actually a selling point for me, because my boys were calling me from over there. It was like, yo, whatever you're seeing in the news, it's way different than what was actually, like, the bars were open. They were giving away free beer. You know, on the news, everybody was like, it's a major crisis. I mean, it probably was a major crisis, but they're like, yo, it's wild out here. I was like, I want to be part of that. For me, the reason why I said it was a selling factor was because it actually told me a lot about the city. Like, no matter how bad shit can get, like, the city bands together. As much as, like, it got a bad rap, like, New York's are assholes, New York is like this and that, everybody's mean. But when you get there, it's like, it's almost like family. Like, we don't even have to know each other. But, like, if we're both in New York or from New York or...
We have to coexist.
Yeah. If shit goes down, we got each other's backs. Yeah, it was in the pandemic, too.
We'll rip you. We'll make fun of you, but we'll help you up.
Yeah, but shit'll get done.
No, it's true, because right after 9/11, everyone came together.
Yeah.
So then when the blackout happened after that, everyone was just, they're like, we can handle this. This is nothing. This is just a blackout.
Yeah.
So everyone, like, you know, that energy kind of
How long
stayed.
Was a blackout? I'm so sorry, guys. I don't know.
I believe it was a week.
Jesus,
week
and a half. It wasn't that long. It depends where you were. Like, I think if you were, like, in the BX or, like, in certain parts of Queens or Brooklyn, it lasted longer. But, like, Manhattan was maybe a day and a half or two.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I was in L.A. at the time, so we just saw the ongoing story.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I went through the other blackout right after that.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that happens. It's always in the summer.
Yeah.
Because everyone has their AC on.
The brownouts.
Oh, actually, no. The one that I went through was what? Not Katrina. Was it? What was the hurricane?
Hillary?
Sandy?
Sandy.
Sandy was bad, too.
And that blacked out everything from 34th Street down to Financial District.
That was like a week.
Yeah.
That was really fucked up.
That was crazy.
That was around Halloween.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was actually, we spent Halloween in that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because I had to go to Sacramento, and I was with a shorty, and she actually drove me to, like, somewhere. I think she drove me to, like, Baltimore Airport. So I could get a flight out and catch my gig.
Yo, Stacy was a real one.
Damn, for real.
Did she carry you through the floods? I got you, Crooked.
Yo, wherever you are, Stacy. If you're single, hit us up.
You got friends just like you.
We need Crooked. Crooked needs Stacy back.
It wasn't like a godsend. I was like, oh shit, like you down to drive? She's like, yeah, let's fuck it, let's go. And I was like, damn. I wouldn't do it. I wouldn't do it for you. I appreciate that shit, but I wouldn't have done that.
If I knew how to drive, I wouldn't drive for you. Like,
so wait, you came to New York, you barbacked for two years.
Yeah.
And then you didn't have any inclination to get into DJing, and then Serato came out.
And then Serato came out.
And then you're like, maybe.
I scraped up my barback money, and I got a
MacBook?
Yeah. Well, actually, a bunch of my friends chipped in. At that time, I finally made friends, and they all chipped in and got me a MacBook. And I bought a Serato off of one of my boys that was like one of the first reps for the U.S. Do you remember Jeff Dionis?
Mm-mm.
He's a record record promoter. He also represented Serato before it was a thing yet.
Mm. So when is this? Like 2004, you think?
2004, 2005.
Well, Serato came out 2005, I think.
So. And then I started DJing in, like, little bars here and there, trying to get my bearings.
Like in LES or, like, the Village or some shit?
Pretty much all of the LES. At the time, there was, like, a club called Fat Baby, which is essentially like a dive bar, but a club.
Yeah,
like, there was a lot of those.
Oh, yeah. The memories of Fat Baby.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. If hell had a bathroom, it was Fat Baby.
It was definitely Fat Baby.
Yeah. Jesus. I remember DJing, and I looked over the edge, and, like, somebody had, like, a fake leg, and he was just
a prosthetic leg.
I was like,
oh yeah.
I'm gonna jot this down as like when I later in life when somebody tells me like, man, this DJ, this gig sucks, I'll be like, dude, you haven't had somebody waving the fake leg. Like, you haven't lived yet.
Wait till you hear that benchmark.
So wait. were you going out in New York at this time?
I was out.
Checking out, like, what was, were you checking out clubs and DJs and anything?
Yeah, so not the club scene. I was always into like the underground, like the edgier scene at the time. At that time, it was like the hipster scene was starting to bubble up.
This is when, like, indie rock kind of started to blow up.
Yeah, this was like pre-Banana Split for you guys in LA. Mm-hmm. I mean, for the LA people. That was before all that. And it was like the indie rock scene, like the Strokes, the Yeah Yeah Yeahs. All that stuff was starting to bubble up.
Right.
And then like the blog house scene. So it was like with like Rocktacon and all those dudes.
Right.
So I was like dwelling in that. I remember I used to go to this one party called the Shit Hammer, and like that was literally the shit. Like they would just post a bunch of porn photos and stuff like that, and it was just like an all-out shit show. Like those are the kind of parties that I went to.
This was like the Cobra Snake days, right? Where like
pre-Cobra Snake. So Cobra Snake was in LA, East Coast. We had this thing called Last Night's Party with this dude named Bronx.
Yeah.
So at what point did you start doing all of these bottle service clubs that like? Where you are in your career right now, you're at Little Sister, you're at PhD, you're at Tao, you're at Marquee, you're at like all these other spots, right?
Yeah.
How did we get to that point to where you are now? Because honestly, the last time I saw you, which is, I don't know, had to be maybe over 5 years ago, the place you were at in your career, no disrespect, you know, like I always loved you as like a DJ and, you know, and you were always cool as fuck. But you were like kind of like a kind of like the fill-in guy.
Yeah.
On-call DJ?
Well, like kind of like, you know, like Neil could do the job and we can't, like someone called out, so let's call Neil.
Yeah.
But you were always the go-to kind of like.
First in line.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
No disrespect. But
No. I don't.
Because I was that guy at one point too. Yeah. Like we all have to be that guy.
Yeah, all of us were that guy until we weren't.
Bro,
you know?
I used to carry my DJ bag in the trunk with a pair of pants.
Yeah.
Just in case I had to go.
So we were the Stacys.
Yeah. We were strong Stacys.
Yeah, we all got a little Stacy with a strong back in our DJ career.
We were all on the bench just waiting to get called in just to be like, yo.
Put me in, coach. Put me in.
I'm ready to go in.
I remember those days, like on a Saturday, I'd be like, fuck, and I kind of look at my phone like, nah, like no one's calling me. And then I would get the call somewhere and I'd be like, all right, fuck it, let's go.
Bro, I would cancel dinners. I'd be like, oh, I can't make it. I gotta go DJ and just go off to the night.
Yeah, there was so many times I did that.
But you know what's funny? Doing that makes you a reliable person. Yeah. And eventually you're the guy, you end up getting those gigs before anybody else.
So, well, wait.
Because you're dependable.
The first people that gave me my shot was Pavon and Sean Rose. They were promoters, and they were doing a couple clubs like pretty much all over the city.
Yeah, yeah. Shout to Pavon, man.
Yeah. And those guys.
Top down on the West Coast now. Yeah, killing it.
They come a long way. And then from there, it's kind of weird. Like, and Crooked, all of us know, just in the city in general, if you're like in a major city, it's really hard to break into those scenes. So what I started to do was I started to formulate a plan of going outside the state and then bringing it back in.
That's what I noticed about you.
Ooh, yeah. That's good.
Yeah, you worked a lot out of town.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I sold myself as a New York DJ. You know, I was doing all the Lower East Side spots, but I understood the clubs. I mean, DJing for as long as I have, I understand how those rooms work.
Right.
It's the music. You just got to figure out how the format is. You know, and I had a lot of, you know, like advisors like Vice and like a lot of the scam guys from early on. They're all like childhood friends. And they were like, this is how it works out here. Because out there and out here were kind of different because Vegas was happening. So anyway, I started to come up with a plan, like, if New York isn't going to recognize me, I'm going to go outside the state, build my name all over the place. They're going to have to bring me in. They will have to. And then, so that's what I started to do.
And but it was a long process.
It was a super long process. Years and but years. I was committed.
Yeah,
I was committed. It was a grind. It was just, my area just was much bigger. And so that's what I did. I built my name outside the state.
What were some of the first cities that you started building your name in? How'd you get those gigs out of town?
So I think the first one...
Were you kind of like saying, like, did you spin at one club once and you're like, oh, I have a residency there?
Yeah.
No.
We all kind of did that at one point. Yeah. Like, no. I think I did, like, I think, like, you at the time I was doing... because I did, like... I was coming up, I did show, I did PM, but I was like, I was booked at like Kane and all these spots, but I never did Marquee. And I think I did one night at Marquee.
They're like, well, that's one of the resi.
But that was, but on my mixtapes, I would list where I DJ, and I was like, well, I can add Marquee there now.
Yeah, technically. I mean, DJs do that still. But yeah. I mean, I'm all about the hustle. Right. It's a lot of smoke and mirrors, but you just got to play that game.
So, what were some of the first cities that you started going to?
North Carolina, Atlanta. Shout out to Alex.
AC.
Over there.
Alex Heisey.
How did
you get into those scenes?
So Atlanta was from DJ Control. Mm. DJ Control was like, hey, because I helped him get into like a couple of the lounge club things out in New York, and he was like, let me return the favor and let me see if I can get you some slots out in my area. And he linked me up with one of my boys, Jason Moon, and he at the time was a promoter, and he brought me down to Atlanta. The rest was history. Like I literally fell in love with that city. Atlanta is like no joke.
So you were just early on having great relationships with out-of-town DJs.
You're networking.
Networking my ass off. But that's always been my thing. That's going back to the whole Vice story about his parents. I always push them. I'm like, yo, we got to go out and we got to network. That's the name of this game. Mm. You just have to. It's how many friends can you conjure up? And that's what he did. That's what we did. We always, late at night, we'd go to a different club, meet a bunch of the people within the industry, and just continue to build that career.
Yeah, I mean, like, that's like, you know, people don't realize it, but that's like kind of like a great talent to have. Just to be like really sociable, likable, and, you know, be able to network easily.
Yeah.
And kind of navigate yourself through multiple circles.
Yeah.
Like it's really important. And, you know, I feel like over the past 10 years or so, you've built like this large, you know, kind of list of like contacts and everyone. And it, like, you know, like your name is everywhere. Everywhere I go, like every DJ knows you.
Yeah.
Like every fucking city I go.
Wow.
It's kind of annoying, but.
I'm sick of this guy.
No, I respect it. I respect it.
No, it's just, you know, I mean, we're all in this.
Yeah, but,
I
mean, it's a great talent to have, but also he's a great talented DJ that goes hand in hand with his work. Yeah. Because a lot of people can get through with the networking and be really bad DJs. But you know what?
Even still, some of those DJs, they really still are like more sustainable than a talented DJ with like an ego or anything else, you know? Like being likable and professional, I would say more importantly, is like more important now than any other time before. Just being likable and like professional is way more important than anything else.
Oh, yeah.
Especially now, yeah.
But before, it's actually crazy. Like, I would get like these nightmare stories about, you know, DJs that were coming into town in certain cities that I'd be in. And they're just like, dude, they have this like superstar attitude.
Oh, sure.
Or I was just grateful. I was just grateful
happy
for getting the shot.
You know?
And talking to other DJs, getting different perspectives on like how their scene works and like their local hits and stuff like that. It was always fascinating to see how everything works so differently.
Fat Baby humbled you.
Yeah. I mean.
Yeah, I have a question actually, because everyone's been DMing me. You know, like I've been getting all these messages. There's been like this new Jolo documentary on Netflix. You know Jolo, right?
Yeah.
Did you ever have to deal with that here in New York?
I had like a short run with Jolo. Literally, it was like only one experience.
That's enough, though, right?
Yeah.
I mean, he didn't.
How many Picassos he gave you?
Jolo didn't pop off when I was playing. Like he did, but it was a mild Jolo.
It was not the tail end. It was the tail end.
Yeah.
When he was like, he was on the run. He was like, don't say my name.
Yeah. Where he may have been, where he thought he might have gotten found out, but
right.
Like, they were just like, yo, can you play Party Rock Anthem? For some weird reason, like, he was obsessed with that song.
Yeah.
And, like, but I don't have the stories like some of our guys do. Like, I was actually at a dinner and, like, somebody was counting the minutes. How many thousand dollars, like, how many thousands he was spending by the minute.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
There was during the Jolo time, there was a time when he would show up at, like, 3 a.m., mm-hmm. And then he would like keep the club open till 5,
yeah,
or 6 a.m. So then, like in New York, you know, a DJ is starting at 10 and they're DJing till 4, and now they're DJing till 6 a.m. And they're watching this like high roller like Jolo or some. It was always somebody or Prince from Dubai or somebody, yep, from Dubai that came in late,
mm-hmm,
who's spending like, I don't know, probably like some crazy shit like $80,000 or $100,000.
Oh, yeah.
Or even more. I don't even know what the fuck's going on.
It was,
but then these clubs would stay open later,
yeah,
and they wouldn't compensate the DJ.
Your rate doesn't change.
Oh no, I was literally going to belt that.
That was crazy.
Like, same rate.
But that's
4 hours,
crazy.
8 hours, same rate.
But that's so insane.
We really appreciate it, guys. Thank you so much.
Because the same thing happened in Vegas. Like Jolo would show up, and everyone, like, you know, obviously the waitresses are happy because they're getting tipped for every like Cristal bottle,
right.
And, you know, I remember there was like 4 a.m. or 4:30 a.m. like, and then it's like the club is kind of like starting to wind down. And then the manager would be like, yo, we're doing a presentation. We're filling a bathtub with Cristal. Jeez. And I'm like, how many bottles of Cristal? They're like, don't worry. He's buying all the bottles of Cristal and we're going to throw them in. And Jolo's going to take a bath in the Cristal.
A bath bomb of Cristal?
And then so like...
That's one of the most baller shit I've ever heard.
And his favorite song was like this Cascade song. So I'd have to play that like 5 times in a row. And then he would get brought in and he's taking a bath. And then everyone's just like, you know, like wilding out, dancing around him in like an empty room. There's like nobody there. Except
so
maybe his peoples. And then maybe I saw like, you know, Paris or someone, maybe a couple celebrities. I don't know. Maybe Jamie Foxx somewhere. And he's over here taking a Cristal bath.
Wait. And taking a Cristal bath naked?
No.
Okay.
With clothes on.
Yo, hold on. With a full suit on, he's on in the bathtub and he's just like.
Just kind of like, hey.
If you're spending that kind of money, you might as well get naked. Because you can literally do, you're above the law at that point.
I'm imagining like, you know. I'm imagining the waitress is like, Jolo, you look dirty.
Let me scrub your back.
Jolo, Jolo. And he's like, okay, I take a bath. And he jumps in. And then they're like popping more champagne and doing it. And I'm over there in the DJ booth like, yo, am I getting paid extra for this shit? And I never got paid extra. I only bring this up because I recently did a 6-hour gig here in New York.
Mm-hmm.
And I was nervous about it. But it actually ended up being the most fun I've had ever. Like, it was like, and I ended up doing 7 hours because they wanted to extend it. But I was like, it was so like.
PTSD. Oh, Jolo again.
No. It was like, it just reminded me. I was like, oh man, like this is what I miss about DJing. I miss 6 hours. I miss DJing the first 2 hours, setting a vibe. And then the next 2 hours and the next 2 hours. And I was like, I missed like controlling the night. And playing all kinds of different music.
Yeah, I thought so.
Like, I missed that shit. But when they asked me to stay longer, the club compensated me for the extra hour. And I was kind of like, wow.
You didn't even have to ask.
No. Yeah, they was like, you know, we'll compensate you. And I was like, oh, like, that's the new thing.
You're like the girl that was getting beaten. I was like, oh, you're opening the door?
Because I was like, you know.
But what do I have to do?
I'm like, I'm not used to that. I'm just used to motherfuckers telling me to stay an extra hour. And then, like, because there'd be some private events sometimes. You DJ some private.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
We're going to go an hour extra, and you'd get paid an hour
for
those private events.
Yeah.
But there's these clubs that they would tell you to stay, like, 2 hours, an hour late, and they never compensated you.
Yeah.
But I remember thinking about that, and I was thinking about that happening a lot in New York, especially during the Jolo period.
Yep.
But I was wondering if you ever had to deal with that shit.
No. He actually left before 4 when that happened.
He was on
and
run.
I was sweating. I was like, oh my god. But now that we're talking about, did you ever get Don Johnson'd?
Yeah, Don motherfucking Johnson.
Who's this?
Yeah,
you know Don Johnson.
He's pre Jolo.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know.
He's like a big spender from Vegas. He's like a, I think like a big poker gambler. He's a big gambler.
I never knew that. Yeah. He just kind of popped up.
He popped up.
Yeah.
He would come to the club and they would like, yo, Don Johnson's in the building. You have to play like Sweet Child of Mine or Bon Jovi. It was Bon Jovi.
Living on a Prayer
or any Bon Jovi. And then wait, what was the newer Bon Jovi that, what was that other song? That was like
My Life.
It's My Life.
It's My Life.
Yeah.
Yep.
If you wanted to shake it up, you could play It's My Life.
But he gave you money. You got compensated for that.
Yeah.
It's true.
Yeah.
He would come and tip you or he'd give you a bottle of champagne.
Yeah.
And you'd just get on the mic and say, Don motherfucking Johnson's in the building. And he'd just come. And like, I remember there was this, I think we talked about it, but there was this time when Nicki Minaj was performing and Five was DJing.
I don't recall this.
And in the middle of her performance, they interrupted Nicki Minaj's performance to do a Don Johnson presentation, and all of a sudden, Bon Jovi's playing, and Nicki Minaj is like in the club on stage, just like, what the fuck's going on? Why do I hear Bon Jovi?
No, the fuck way! Like,
she doesn't know that management and the operators and the owners want this, so like they're kind of hating on Five because they're like, why the fuck are you interrupting my set and playing
Bon Jovi.
Like, why are you saying Don Johnson? Who the fuck is this guy? And why are you playing Bon Jovi
right now?
Wow,
that's fucked, bro.
But that's how Vegas was at that. I mean, probably still they would do that. I mean, they probably wouldn't do it now because of social media, because people would be like, they would be like, what the fuck's going on?
Damn,
the barbs would tear the place down.
Yeah, yeah, bro.
Somebody needs to bring Don Johnson on road and see how he felt when Jolo stepped on the scene.
So, yeah, he took my reign.
And then Jolo appeared.
Yeah, I want to say it was Don Johnson that caused that whole Deadmau5 thing.
Yes.
Yeah. Wait, what Deadmau5 thing?
Where he got tipped like, I don't know, $100,000 or more. Like,
I had heard that tip didn't actually go through.
I heard it went through.
Oh, it did.
He was scanning it to see it go through, and then he played it. I think they were at a Wynn property, probably Excess.
Yeah.
Because they were threatening legal action if he didn't.
Yeah. And Deadmau5 was playing, and Don Johnson was there, and he wanted to hear Bon Jovi.
Yeah.
And he made Deadmau5 play Bon Jovi, but he said, I'll tip you like $100,000.
Yeah, there's like a YouTube video apparently of him playing that.
I don't know the exact amount. It could have been more than $100,000.
Yeah, it was something ridiculous.
Yeah, for Deadmau5 to do some shit.
So,
yeah.
I just wanted to ask you because you brought up Jolo. I was like, wait, who was before Jolo? There was somebody else, and it was Don Johnson.
He comes to New York sometimes, right?
Yeah.
I
only got Don Johnson here in Philly.
Mm.
Yeah.
But you saw him regularly in New York? You came through?
Nah, it was just like once in a while because I only heard about him in Vegas, and then he would appear in New York. I'm like, oh, shit. My boys in Vegas were talking about
it.
Well,
you were definitely DJing in New York when New York was starting to become almost like Vegas, right? When started having like this weird Vegas energy.
Yeah, but not like...
The music wasn't there, but they wanted to make the same Vegas money.
Yeah.
And kind of like, you know, cater to the clients.
I mean,
in Vegas, but in New York.
We weren't making the money that you guys were making. You guys were killing it.
What do you mean? The bar or the DJs?
The DJs, like, we had, like, I wasn't in the scene when the Spenders, when it was big in Vegas.
Mm-hmm.
I was more in the Lower East Side scene at that time.
You were?
Yeah, I was deeper in the Lower East Side scene, the indie rock scene, the hipster scene, than while, like, you guys were, like, Reach and everybody was over at Marquee.
Yeah.
I was in the Lower East Side scene.
Who, like, what is this Madonna story? Like, Marco was telling me about, was that when you were DJing or was that before?
No, this is during.
What is this Madonna story?
So.
Marco wouldn't shut up about it.
Yeah. He smiled as soon as you brought it up. He's like, yeah, he took my notes.
The epicenter of like the hipster scene was a spot called Luke and Leroy down in the West Village. And I was their in-house DJ when some of the guys were unreliable. But I was also like the bar back, the AV guy. And so one day the owner was like, yo, I need you to come in early to make sure that the equipment is right. I was like, all right, cool. He was like, we got a special guest performance, but I can't really tell you who it is. So I walked in there and I was just looking at the equipment. I was like, yeah, it's fine. I went outside and I was just hanging outside. Two SUVs roll up, these umbrellas pop up. And then like these guys that look like Secret Service guys, the umbrellas just kind of ran right into the front door. And the owner was like, yo, go upstairs to the club and make sure that the audio stuff is good. So I will run up there and it's dark. And all of a sudden you see these flashlights. Like, who are you? This and that. And like, they're pulling out guns. I didn't even know what was going on. And then the lights come on and it's Madonna and all of her security. And basically they were promoting a new single. It's called Hung Up at the time.
Act like we don't know what that song is.
That little song.
All right, let me small song.
Wait, we've never heard. Can you sing us a little bit of it?
How does it go?
I'm gonna pull up the lyrics really quick and sing this for you. Now they were promoting Hung Up,
and it sampled some big disco song.
Yeah, right.
I don't know.
Can we?
From Baba or something?
Yeah.
So I almost got shot by Madonna's security, but the night went on well, and
so this was a near death experience.
Yeah.
With Madonna. So this is the story that you wanted Marco for us to tell and talk about.
I'm happy now.
I think we're gonna shut off Marco's mic
for the rest of the episode. Raise your hand when you want to speak.
It wasn't really much of a DJ thing.
No. It's funny though. You know, you almost dying.
You made it.
Madonna almost killed me. So,
I do have a question though. Like with New York after the pandemic, I feel like we're talking a little bit about this, and I tell people this because everywhere I go, like I don't know, and I could be wrong, but when I talk to DJs in certain cities. Like, let's say Miami, Texas, and maybe certain different, cities across the country, they're saying, things are slowing down, and there's not as much work. And then I'm telling them, New York is, getting busier than ever.
Yeah.
I mean, and then every time I come to visit, there's, a new spot that opened. There's, more and more spots opening up. You're even saying, you're tired, right?
I'm exhausted. I'm on my third cup of coffee right now. Right.
But I'm saying with your experience, it's funny because it's when I talk to some of these, I've noticed that the cities that were open during the pandemic, when everything was closed and they were open and they were killing it and they were working 6 to 7 nights a week.
Yep.
Those cities are slowing down.
Yes.
But then New York has become I'm tired, man. I'm working 5-6 nights a week.
Yeah.
What's going on over here?
I don't. Government money is still flowing. I don't know. Yeah. I just know that there's more clubs now than I've seen since
10
Yeah,
10 years.
Since the Kane days. That whole 3-block radius.
Yeah, the 27th Street we were talking about.
Marquee, Home, Guest House, Bungalow 8,
yeah.
Quo, all of that stuff. Now it's just scattered throughout the city. We have clubs opening up constantly. So there's no shortage of work. It's just a matter of trying to get into that scene.
All these motherfuckers gonna start moving here.
Yeah,
you made it too hot. Made it too hot.
The gold rush.
I mean, we were down for a while. We were down for a while.
And is the pay decent for most of these places?
It's actually better post pandemic than it was pre pandemic.
Oh, okay.
Right.
Yeah,
I've heard the rates are going up.
Yeah. The rates are shockingly going up because they were down for a while.
There's certain venues that are paying more than Vegas.
Ooh,
yeah,
that's good.
I don't know about all that, but
no. They are.
Yeah. Trust
me. You'd be surprised, Marco.
Yeah.
You'd be very fucking surprised.
You'd be very surprised. So it's going good out here.
Yeah, it's great. It's busier than I've seen in a long time.
And then with the DJs, the energy with the DJs, I'm hearing about all these new DJs coming out. There's a new generation. Everyone's eating though. Everything's good, right?
It's good. There's I think right now with the older DJs and the younger DJs, we're just trying to figure out how to coexist, I guess. It's coming out of the pandemic, it was definitely eye-opening because we were who are these people? And then whatever happened to these other people? It was just when the doors open, it was a whole nother, it was not even just a new class. It was several classes just kind of came in. So
I am starting to see, though, that there is a line in the sand between two different scenes. And it's a Manhattan scene. And then there's the Brooklyn scene.
Yeah.
But the Brooklyn scene is popping.
Yeah.
I rarely go to Brooklyn. I feel like I got to go to Brooklyn more often because there's a lot of great DJs and a lot of dope parties in Brooklyn that I have to go out of my way to come and check out because I don't know. Everyone's telling me the Manhattan scene is cool, but it's almost it's holding on to this era
yeah,
from 10 years ago, this mm-hmm. bottle service era.
Yeah.
But it's almost like Brooklyn is really, like something organic is happening over there. Where it kind of maybe feels like the Village or LES or like, you know.
There's like scenes. You know? There's yeah. parties. Like MoMA's party, Everyday yeah. People. Like there are crews that are coming out that are throwing their own things. Whereas like pre-pandemic, it was just clubs. You know,
yeah.
Now there's like crews coming in and throwing their entire nights, and they're pretty much running the scenes. Like they're running their own scene, if that makes any sense.
Right, like, right. I've yet to go to like Brooklyn Mirage. Like I haven't even stepped foot in there.
That is.
And everyone keeps telling me that shit is like, they're like, they're just floored. Like, you haven't been to Brooklyn Mirage. I'm like, no, I haven't gone.
Well, Brooklyn Mirage even has their competitors, Tech Support. Mm. Like, and that's like a whole warehouse underground scene too. They do Circle Loco. They do like, it's like a big like tech house scene. But, you know, you got Brooklyn Mirage, Tech Support. Like, Brooklyn is just crazy right now. They're just cranking out things.
With you working so much, is it kind of a problem that you don't get to go out and hear other DJs? Or it doesn't matter anymore?
It is a struggle. It is a struggle trying to keep up with, you know, who, like, the new guys that are coming up.
Yeah. Or just even checking out different scenes and what's going on, right?
It is tough. You know, I try to pop in when I do have nights off, when, like, I'm not lined up back to back on gigs.
Yeah, yeah.
I try to, but I'm also exhausted. So.
I'm tired.
Yeah, my feet don't work like it did, 15 years ago. So it's interesting. I don't mean to cut you off, but like the younger generation of DJs coming in, they actually are showing what open format looks like now.
Mm. In their perspective.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. In what ways?
Like, coming up in the scene, you know, we had AM. I spoke about this a little bit on our podcast. We had AM, and the newer generation is almost doing something that resembles that.
Oh.
Where they're doing the unpredictable.
Right.
Like, for us, it was like, what, Journey, Don't Stop Believing. Like, those things, like, he would throw that out there, Black Betty, mm-hmm. all that stuff. Now it's Lenny Kravitz into Mobama.
Well, the thing is, like, the New York scene always had it. AM just kind of, like, brought turntablism into it.
Enhanced it a bit.
And okay. So what he did was, like, he made it, like, you know, 4K, 3D.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? He made it into, like, a Marvel movie. But it was always around, like, New York hip-hop DJing and the club scenes always had open format.
Yeah.
So, like, it was always a mixture. So they always had the rock, hip hop and everything in there.
But just before the pandemic, that whole like 2 years before the pandemic,
yeah,
it ran stale.
Oh no. I'm sure. Like no, I'm talking about like in the 90s to 2000s.
Oh, okay.
Like we were like before pre-AM.
Yeah.
Like we were doing all the rock sets, we were doing everything. We were mixing everything. We were mixing house and hip hop and everything.
He just elevated with the turntablism.
But the difference between the young kids playing open format versus like what was going on in the 90s and 2000s is that we would hit pockets. So we'd have sets.
Right.
We'd do like an 80s set, a rock set, which would be like, you know, 4 to 8 songs of rock music. And then we'd move to like another genre.
Yeah.
But these kids are doing one song into one song, which is very interesting. Because it's more interesting to me, and I think it's, I've talked to people, and they're like, I think it's semi-genius, because I can't find the patterns in what they're doing. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But they're telling, like, I talked to, like, other DJs, and they're like, no, you're giving them more credit than what they're doing. He's like, I think they're just going by BPM, and they just have like this weird playlist or crate with like songs.
I do a little bit of both. I do the song selection bunch, and then I do the 1-1-1-1.
I'm the same way when it comes to pockets. Like,
right. Yeah.
You got, if you have that flow, go with that flow for a little bit and then switch gears.
Right.
But the thing is like the newer guys, maybe they just don't have anything like anyone to reference. Like AM was a while ago. These guys are like 25.
Yeah, AM's almost.
So they were like
almost 20 years ago.
I mean, I can't put a year on it, but they don't have a point of reference for like other like older DJs to look and be like, I want to do that. They're just doing whatever they feel.
I think
they don't know to do pockets. They just
I don't think anyone needs to do a pocket. I just think like the way that we did it back in the day, like in the 2000s or 90s, it was just different. Everyone did sets because it dealt with a certain energy at a certain time when the club opened.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
So like it was like, you know, a rock set, we know it was like a high power rock set, and then there was like a mid-tempo rock set that we would do a little bit earlier. But we would never do a 120, 128 BPM rock set at 11 o'clock. We'd hit that shit at 2 a.m.
Yeah. Right.
You know what I mean? When everyone's going to sing the words and everyone's drunk and we know they're drinking.
Yeah. Of course.
You know, but I think the way, that's why we did those pockets, because it's like AC/DC, Bon Jovi, Guns N' Roses, Gary Glitter, or like whatever we're putting in that pocket, you know?
I would feel you guys did it because it's more structured and it's more palatable to digest that than a 1-1-1-1, because it's kind of like, where the fuck am I at? And then these kids they're the TikTok generation where every video is different, every song they hear is different, so their intake is probably a little bit more different.
I think as a DJ, it makes more sense to stay in a pocket and get the most out of that energy as you can, and then when you see it kind of getting a little oversaturated, like, oh,
switch
people are getting tired of this energy.
Yep.
Yeah. Let's go to another energy, another pocket, and see how they go. Because there's no fucking way back in the day, if I went into a dance hall like set,
rhythm,
I could play one dance hall song and then go into hip hop.
Dude, you would get
somebody
murdered.
Would come to me.
Yeah.
Well, that's
somebody would yell at me. If I played one rock song and went into hip hop, somebody would be like, why didn't you play this and this?
But that's
why you only play one LA song.
Cats, LA Cats did that shit.
Yeah.
Because we didn't know what the fucking rhythm was, and we didn't have no Jamaican culture out there. So when you would play, I don't know, like a Sean Paul song into a soca song, which is Kevin Little, you'd be like, oh, this kind of makes sense. In their brain, it makes sense. But you're playing two different things at that point. So I get what you're saying. But
no, I think it's about kind of like also when you're playing for a room, everyone's kind of unified in one energy. So if you're in disco and you stay in disco and you keep that energy going, and then you're like, all right, you're getting tired of this. Let me try to go into 80s, or let me try to go into like a little up-tempo hip hop, or switch it up. I think now, because people are creating their own playlists.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's a playlist generation.
Yep.
Yes.
Not only that, people want to stand out and be like, this is me.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like this is like this. The music I'm playing is a representation of me.
And my personality.
And my taste. You're following what I want you to hear.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
So that's the one song into one song into one song.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, some of these young kids they're very in tune with what the other young kids want.
Yeah.
So it's working because they're literally in tune with each other.
Yeah, but that also goes back to what I was saying. Like, they don't have a point of reference. They're mm-hmm. they're doing what they know that
they're doing
works.
Them. Yeah. Yeah, they're doing them.
But it might be because they, and this is just my thoughts on this, like, it might be because they just have never tried to get the most out of one genre, like the pockets that we're talking about.
Right.
Because they know that that works. So they just do that without trying to expand more, like, okay, if I'm going to do this rock song, I'm going to do this rock song, I'm going to do this rock song, and get the most out of it, and then switch gears. Because they don't have any point of reference. They don't have the older open format DJ that they were like, I want to be just
I
like
think
that
the point
guy.
Of reference is what...
They're just doing them.
I think their point of reference now is probably the latest one, I would say, when Virgil was DJing. And it was kind of like weird, obscure shit. And how much obscure shit can you... The more obscure you make it, the crazier and cooler you get. And I think that's their latest point of reference.
Well, I think... I don't know if it was Virgil's style of DJing. I just think the fact that Virgil is DJing is the point of reference. I think that he is like... And he is a person who's creative... And no matter what he's doing and expressing himself,
it's acceptable.
Yeah.
It's authentically Virgil.
Yes.
Okay.
And that is probably more important than somebody who's like, you know, I know what to play for this crowd and to get everyone moving.
And the structure of it.
When it's more just like it's Virgil. And it's kind of like that in itself is a statement of him DJing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because let's be honest, like, I don't think I've met one person that says, I'm going to watch Virgil DJ to hear what he's going to play and like enjoy his music. People are there to just watch and experience Virgil up there doing DJing. Virgil.
Yeah,
because and to put it on social media.
And I don't know if you guys ever saw him DJ. I saw one of his sets at XS one year that he did, and it was like it was kind of left everywhere. Like it was just here's this, here's that. I think he played like "Say My Name," Destiny's Child, into a Kanye record that I was like, that doesn't make no fucking sense at all. But it. The kids loved it.
It could make sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I was just like,
sounds kind of dope.
I know. Well,
I'm making mental notes of this.
Yeah, but it's again, what I'm used to is seeing you guys.
But it's also this boiler room era where it's kind of like.
That too. That's
if
the point
I'm
of
cool and all my friends are cool and we're fucking feeling this music, you guys suck. You guys aren't on this shit. Like, we're on this
you
shit.
You guys need to be.
You know what I mean?
And it's like another point of reference.
And that's another thing. It's like, yo, if like. That's the whole thing of having, like, you know, being a promoter or being a DJ and having a following, and then your following just being like behind you in a boiler room set, wilding out. They feel like they're part of your movement too,
right?
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying. I don't know. I could be wrong with all of this.
Yeah, no, but you're right. Another point of reference is the TikTok sets, where it's just like they're playing this and then they go left and the fucking crowd explodes, and that's another point of reference.
What's a TikTok set?
Like those sets where you just see. Just like a routine of these DJs, they're playing something and then they goes to another song that you were not expected to go with, and then the room explodes and the video just continues like you should have been there, like it wants to give these kids like a FOMO, like you should have been here.
That's that was us playing "All I Do Is Win"
back in the day.
That's that one song that anytime you saw it on the Insta story, you're like. I know exactly what that dude's playing. Yeah, it's the only song that everybody's hands
but
go
again,
up
that,
in a club.
That's the point of reference. Like other people, like myself, had AM and these other cats.
I think Jamie had a good point on the whole Spotify thing. It's like a lot of these guys, a lot of these DJs that came out, a lot of them came out of the pandemic, and it was essentially they were just playing Spotify songs.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was that or SoundCloud. Like, because I'm seeing a lot of mashups being played now, like current mashups. That you would only hear on SoundCloud, and some of these DJs, like some of the styles that they're doing, is essentially like they're just selecting songs, which is fine. They're selecting the right songs,
but I also think we're seeing the development stage of a lot of these DJs.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Well, absolutely.
Whereas like back in the day, we would have never seen this. You know, we would have never seen this.
I mean, how long did it take you guys to go outside and DJ when you from the first moment you got your equipment and started practicing? It took some years to even get brave to be outside. These kids, they'll get the equipment today and have a gig tomorrow.
Well, it's not. I think it moves faster than that. I think it's if you have a following and you have like the numbers on social media. You could actually just do anything.
Yeah. Right.
You could like be a DJ. Mm-hmm. You could like start your own TV show.
Your photographer one day.
You could be an actor. Yes. You could be whatever you want as long as you have a following. So like I think what we're seeing, like I said, is we're seeing if I already have a following, you know, and I'm cool and I look cool and I know how to dress, you know, it gives me like 2 years to develop my DJing. But everyone's seeing the development. Whereas anyone else who wasn't famous, like all of us here, you know, you wouldn't see that development.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, but we've seen that before, too. Like, promoters turning to DJs. That was, like, a big thing.
Well, there's no promoters. I feel like promoters hardly exist nowadays, you know?
In New York, there's a whole new crop of them. There's a whole new crop of them.
Oh, that's good.
And they're so different.
So different. But some of these, about 5 to 8 years ago, like promoters were turning into DJs.
Yeah.
And a lot of us that were just DJs were getting X'd out because not only can they play music, they were bringing people.
Yeah.
You know? Because they were getting paid for both. Well, they're actually getting paid for one as a promoter and they were just going up there and playing songs.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And selling bottles. I mean, it is a hustle.
So. I have a question, like leading up to where you are right now in your career. Would you say like this is like you're the most confident in your abilities and skills to hold down a room right now?
I'm in the
at the highest level of your DJing right now?
You see, so the reason why I'm like hesitant to answer that is because I'm not really trying to achieve a level. What I'm trying to do is I'm just trying to have fun again. And I am now. I'm having a lot more fun now than I was before. where it was just kind of like, you know, certain people were dictating like the music and stuff like that. Now it's like, because open format is now open format again.
Yeah.
I'm in this like, fuck it, let's just try it. Let's see.
With all the stages we go in our careers, you know, everything leads up to something. So like, I'm right. asking like to where you are right now, where you're very busy and you're able to hold down multiple rooms and juggle events and do all of this. Like, what was the training that led to this that makes you confident and competent to execute all of this shit?
I mean, for me, it's just time.
Right.
Like, I put in a lot of time, witnessed a lot of scenes and see the shift of music constantly, but that's constant. So it's like, that's why I'm saying like trying to achieve, I'm not really trying to achieve, there's no real goal here except to just go out, have fun, try new shit, try old shit, and just keep it moving.
But you're having more fun now because like you're saying like the music selection isn't as limited. It's not boxed in. It's actually not. Opened up now.
It is very open right now.
I feel like it's really open now too, so I'm having more fun.
Yeah, I'll do a tech house scene. I'm doing Little Sister on Thursday, which is predominantly hip hop. I'm at Highlight Room, which is open format, and then I'm at Star Child, which is like anything goes. As long as you keep the room, anything goes. Mm. And that's New York. All of it's New York.
Yeah.
You know, so, and then I could, the following week, I'll be at the Palace where it's all tech house. You know, I'm predominantly all tech house. So it's like one of those things where I'm more confident, yes, but there's really no goal. Like, I'm just having fun now.
But that's rare, though. Not a lot of DJs can do all those rooms. You know what I mean?
And that just came through experience and like just being open-minded to all the different scenes.
Because I talked to a lot of, you know, my peers, your peers, and some of them were like, I didn't think I'd be DJing this much at my age, like at the age I'm at.
Yeah.
And then, we always talk about, you know, where's this going to go? Like, is this going to continue?
Right.
But it's like, do you feel like you're just getting better and like you're just, it's, you know?
Yeah, I think so. I think so. As the scene has gotten younger and I'm getting older, experiencing all this different music and just being open-minded to all of this stuff.
Right.
You know, knowing the things that I've learned in the past, what works and what doesn't work, that's where the confidence came in. And so I'm just not afraid to play things. Like, mm-hmm. you remember when you stepped into the scene, you're like, I don't know, I might get, you know, fired for this. And like,
you don't have that anymore.
I don't have that anymore. I'm not going to lose a room in one song. So just try it.
How are you at DJing an hour set compared to a 6-hour set?
Oh my God. I mean, I'm much better with 1 hour, but
you are.
six hours, I'm good in 6 hours.
So you'd rather spend an hour set?
Oh yeah.
Really?
I love to be on my couch.
No, we're talking about like performing wise. Is it easier for you to an hour set? Like putting that together than a 6-hour set.
No, I like doing. I tell him Booker's gonna be like, all right, fuck it, we'll just throw him on for 6 hours. But I like doing longer sets because I can control the room.
Right.
I can build that room the way that I wanted to build that room.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes having openers, they have a different idea than I do.
Yeah.
And I have. You know, peaks and valleys where, you know, some openers will just go ham, you know, and if that's what they do, that's what they do. But
do you ever get asked to do one of those 1 hour sets?
Yeah.
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 Like, how do you handle it? You have fun with that? That stresses me out more than a 6 hour set.
Anxiety like a motherfucker.
Because I have to condense all of this music into an hour that kind of defines and represents me.
Yeah, but...
But at the same time, keep the floor rocking, and at the same time, not play something that was played already, or
be rare.
Something that someone is going to play.
Right.
Like, I'd rather play last and do an hour. Let me play last, because I've heard everything that everyone's played.
Yeah.
But if I'm, like, in the middle or before somebody, I'm just going to play, like, almost like an opener.
Yeah.
Because I don't want to step on anyone's toes.
You don't want to burn nobody.
So you're never really going to hear, like, an hour set of me really going off
if
I'm playing before someone.
I just assume that everybody's going ham. So I'm just going to just
It's like a go for self. Yeah. It's like a go for self time, right?
Yeah.
I guess it's a festival time slot.
Yeah.
That's what it is.
It's just like they just want to see you do it, or they just want to hear you do it. But if you're going to play I Spice Deli, I promise you the three DJs before you did it too. So you just might as well just do it, you know, or don't. But they just want to just go ham.
That's what I hate. Like when you're like, when you have something, but the DJ right before he does something similar, uses the same song, you're like.
I actually typically don't take those gigs though, because of that. It's like.
I take those gigs because I'm uncomfortable with them. So I want to force myself to be better.
Yeah. Of course. Yeah.
I get that.
But I think there is, a disconnect with some of the DJs where they think a festival set is opening and it's not. And so like I think we recently like posted a reel where everyone's going off about like, you know, no hands or some shit like that. You know, like, oh, like the opener's burning the headliner shit.
Yeah.
But and everyone's saying, why are you holding back the opener? And I think people are thinking a festival set is an opening set. And it's not. An opening set at a nightclub is completely different from a 1 hour festival set.
Yeah.
So when you're doing a festival 1 hour lineup, go off. But when you're opening a nightclub, have to have a little bit more knowledge on how to build that room up and lead it to midnight.
And energetic.
And I think there is that disconnect with some of these DJs where they don't understand the difference. But I'm even me myself, I'm learning to really handle an hour set that represents me properly, you know?
Yeah. You have to learn some way. Like there, I had an opener that's a mutual friend of ours, and just went ham on me.
They're seeing it like
that. And he was like, how did I do? And I was like, that was the worst set
I've heard in a long time.
And because we're boys, I'm going to tell you that. You can't do that shit.
You said that.
Yeah, I did. I had to.
What was their reaction? You're a hater?
No. I was like, because I explained why.
Neil Jackson would never yell at somebody like that.
No. I tried to be as honest as I can because like they are so new to the scene that they don't know and I wouldn't do this to like a complete stranger. I'll just be like, you know what, I'll just work with whatever but he is my boy and I want him to succeed, so I have to tell him because if not, if it's some complete stranger that felt that bold, it might come off way different. But he knows that I'm like just trying to help him.
You're coming from a place of love.
Yeah, you know? Tough love, like, yo. You can't do that shit anymore.
You said that in the club? In the club?
Yeah. Wow. Like right when we were switching over, I was like, look, don't ever do that shit again. I was like, what I said to him, I was like, so what do I play?
That's a good question.
And
he said, there's so much music. Get in your bag.
Get in your bag.
Man.
Deep enough.
I would have pulled that USB right out of his computer like, boop. All right. I'll just save the five songs I know you have not played.
How bad was it? Like, did you get really burned for like an hour straight? Or like he played bangers 10 minutes before you got
every out? Song. Every song that was hot, old and new, he went for it.
I said hot song that's old and new, because a lot of people would be like, well, that song is X amount of years old, though. Why is the headliner wanting to play it? But again, there's an
energy. I mean, Obama's old, but that shit still goes off.
Exactly.
You know, everything Ice Spice, Sexy Red, that was all touched before I even got on.
Wow.
Jesus. All of it was. Lil Uzi Vert, Just Wanna Rock, all of it was.
It was in New York?
It was in New York. Oof. And so.
What did the DJ say?
He was like, I actually don't know, because any answer that he gave me wouldn't have been a good
one. It didn't. The easy.
Not even that. I was just like, look at him. I'm like, what do I? I'm just give me five songs and I'll just start with that. He didn't say anything. I think he didn't believe me when I said it. And then I said it the next day. I was like, dude, that was bad. That was like really bad. That's not an opening set at all. Like at all. So, don't get me wrong. I didn't come at him like, fuck you, you fucking suck. I told him that it was bad, and I told him how to fix it, generally how to fix it in his own way.
Yeah. So what was,
but
what
it's,
was
your it's only because he throws parties. And so he doesn't really, he never has to open for anybody. Right. He started his career throwing parties. So it's, and it took me a while to understand it, that he just knows how to build the room in his way.
Right. Yeah.
You know, so he never had to break sets up into opening and headlining slots.
But also there's this like kind of ignorance of like not thinking of what is the DJ going to play after me.
Right.
Because it's just about, what am I going to do for this room?
Right.
How am I going to kill it?
How am I going to kill
it? You're not thinking about the whole night.
Right.
You're thinking about the 2 hours or hour and a half that you're opening. How do I stand out next to this guy who's headlining already?
Right. But he's never had to open.
It's almost like imagine like an NBA game.
Yeah, exactly. I was going to say that.
And there was only 5 players playing every quarter. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's like, you know, every 5 different players had to play every quarter.
Yeah.
And everyone's just going ham or going for self.
Yeah.
In every
not
quarter.
Not passing the ball, no fucking communication.
You know, I don't know. Is that a bad, that's kind of a bad analogy.
No, it's a good one because
you But there's no teamwork. It's not, there's no idea of the big picture of the whole game
of
in all 4
game.
Quarters.
Right.
It's just about
how many.
All that matters is what I do in this one quarter.
Yep.
Yeah.
Fuck the team.
Yeah.
Right.
How many assists?
Right.
How many
perfect
points?
Analogy.
Yeah, how many points I can get more than anybody. It's not even about winning the game. It's just like, how do I look like the MVP star even though we lose?
Street ball in the NBA? Like, there's no passing. Like,
yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Go for yeah.
You're never getting assists.
But it is that mentality of kind of like, you know, I remember when DMX would, like, perform. And he's like, you know, I think he had the saying, like, I don't care if I'm first. I don't care if I'm last. When I get off the stage, the show is over. You know what kind of shit?
Well, that's the story.
And I feel like every DJ is approaching it like that. And I'm like, and then, you know, I was just kind of like, yeah, that's not how it works in a club.
Yeah.
With a night.
But that goes back to what you were saying earlier. It's like we're seeing some of these guys in their development stage. That's why I'm saying, like, I'm not going to hold back. I'm going to tell them, like, look, you can't do this. Like,
if you're playing No Hands before midnight, to me, it's like you don't really know what to play.
Right.
And no one's put you in your place.
Like, even if I was opening for anybody, I don't care what kind of room it was, I wouldn't even touch No Hands. It wouldn't even be a thought in my head. And they're like, well, what you going to play? Like, all this, like, you know, you're not going to get the room up. I'm like, yeah, I'll get the room up. But depending on what room you're doing, you don't really need to drop No Hands before midnight.
Right.
I don't care what the fuck room you're in. It could be a hood night. It could be a open format night. It could be any kind of night.
Right.
And, you know, but for me, before midnight, you don't need to drop that song.
Right.
Because you don't know what to do with that song. It's like you're playing that song like it's just a song.
Right.
You're not knowing that you have to set that song up at the right time.
The effect of that song is...
Yeah, there's psychology to it.
There's certain songs that just hit and unifies the room.
Right.
And it really unifies the room and everyone sings. Like, if a song has like 2 to 3 moments where everyone's singing the words, that is not a before midnight song.
Right.
Or opener song.
That goes back to like even requests for like the big songs of the night. I'm like, what would you rather? I was like, look, I'm going to play this later on, but you should play it now. It's going to get everybody like fucking rowdy or whatever. Like, would you rather hear this song sober or drunk?
That's a good question.
And then they're like, oh, well, you know, if it's drunk, it's like, you know, then they understand it, that like when I'm wasted and I'm hearing this song, I'm singing every word. Yeah. I might make up words, but they're singing that song.
Yeah,
there's
a
psychology to it. I was like, you don't want to hear this right now. You think you do, but you want to hear this when you're wasted.
We'll get to it.
Yeah.
It's a long night.
I'm like, yo, fam, like play the new Jack Harlow. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I'm not going to play
like,
that.
Yo, that's a perfect song for 11:30, 11 o'clock. Yeah. Play that shit.
Damn, I was hoping that shit was going to be like late night.
Like,
you never did.
You think I'm... for my headliner set, I'm like, oh my God, please don't play the Jack Harlow so I could drop that at 1:30.
Yeah.
I don't give a fuck about that song.
Yeah.
That song is like, you know, like the new music that's out? That's cool.
Yo, play
like,
all that shit.
It'll catch a vibe. Some girls might sing for the first fucking 14, 16 bars.
Yeah.
After that, like, it's a problem. I gotta find no hands or something. I gotta find
no
something.
No hands loaded.
Like, you know what I'm saying? I'm better off making a version of that Jack Harlow. What is it? Loving Me? What is that song?
Loving on me.
I'm better off taking that song and putting the motto lyrics a cappella on that song, and it'll carry out longer. Like, that's what I'm noticing about these songs.
That's a good edit, bro.
No, but I'm saying that that's the weird.
I'm surprised
thing.
That doesn't exist.
Yeah, that's
but
a really good
sure
edit.
No, but what's that? What's that JID song? Surround sound.
Yeah.
That shit is big, but it's not. It's kind of like if you take his lyrics out. There's a version of that with Paris with Watch the Throne Paris.
Yeah, the Jay-Z and Kanye song.
There's a Jay-Z Paris version where he's like, "Ball so hard, motherfuckers can't find me," and I'm like, and I play that version, and it hits way fucking harder because people vibe out to it for 64 bars and they know every exact word and they're enjoying the beat. Whereas like you don't really remember what JID saying in the first after the 16 bars.
I don't even know. I know the beat. I don't even know the lyrics to that song.
Because honestly, the intro's great, you know, with the Mos Def sample. And then when it hits, you know, it's like, oh shit, like I like this song. But then it just doesn't carry. It doesn't have the legs to carry.
Right.
You know,
a lot of
another 30 seconds or 45 seconds.
A lot of new music doesn't. I feel like I'm playing a lot of throwbacks now.
Yeah, some of these editors, they're saving the rooms, man, with some of this shit. And I was like, yo, like, that one Paris edit, I was like, you know, I play the GID, and then I go into that Paris, and I see everyone screaming and singing a song, and I'm like, shh.
I gotta do this. I gotta go find that edit now.
Yeah.
No, but I'm thinking like, yo, you, like, motherfuckers should do this with more shit, like, with more records. Like, I don't know, like, Rich Baby Daddy. Like, do you guys play the Drake portion?
I do.
Yeah, I play that whole thing.
I skip that shit.
Really?
Really?
I go to SZA, and it flows way better.
I'm going to try that. Mm. That's a good...
I'm playing that whole thing. They're waiting for it almost. They're hungry for that
shit. I feel like the SZA hits way harder. I could be wrong, though.
The girls definitely want to hear the SZA part. Fam. I've had somebody like, do not cut the SZA stuff, the SZA part out. But.
Yeah, because I'd rather hear the SZA part. When she's like, do you need to be, it's like, yo, and then I'm kind of like grooving.
My eyebrows raised to that one. Yeah. I was like, whoa, he's going for
I'm
it.
Going for it.
But when I have to go crooked.
We have lost crooked right now.
but when I hear the Drake, part, it kind of just like kills the energy.
It works for me, but you might be right.
Man, try it. I'm telling you,
I'm going to try that.
Every time everyone's expecting Drake and they hear the SZA part, the girls light up. And they fucking sing it.
Do you leave the sexy red part?
Of course. No, the sexy red part is the hook. I'm gonna leave that in.
No, her verse. Do you get to
Does her?
Oh, the very end?
Yeah, she has a
verse. Well, that answers your question right there.
Yeah, never mind.
Yeah, I didn't even know she had a verse.
Yeah, at the very end.
Yeah, she has
I was in mid conversation, I was like, oh shit, she's in the song. Yeah.
But it's like when I hear someone play like G-Eazy. What is it, the Jeezy Cardi B, No Limit?
Yeah.
And then they play the Jeezy verse.
You gotta get.
I'm like, why don't you? If you skip to Cardi, the girls wild out way more.
Yeah, that's the one you play.
That's true.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? It's almost like, unless you're opening, you're like, man, I'm gonna do two verses. I understand that. But if you're kind of like really trying to get it up and get the energy going.
Yeah.
If you skip that Jeezy and you go to Cardi.
Yeah.
It's like. Ultimately, they're gonna.
I have an editor that just does that. I'm like, just the Cardi B version.
Well, you could just like kind of just hit the cue button into the Cardi B.
I don't even take the chance.
No, but
forget to hit the cue button and I'm fucked. I'm like, oh.
I'm telling you though, there's something about if some of these editors take known verses and start putting it on the new songs, leave like the chorus, but like surprise motherfuckers.
Yeah.
I feel like some of these new songs might have a little more legs.
I think you're onto something.
Or just at least re-edit it.
Yeah. I mean, it depends too, because like sometimes they're ready to sing the first verse and then it jumps and they're like, oh, wait, that wasn't the verse.
First verse of what though?
Of like, I'm saying some specific songs when people like start singing it or start
rapping
it.
But then that's not a song that you change. Yeah. But there's specific songs that you know that can't even last through the first verse.
Yeah,
like the.
So you're gonna tell me like no one really gives a fuck about the Jack Harlow first verse?
Do you know the words after "I'm Vanilla Baby"? Nobody knows.
It's true.
That's what I'm saying. And if you hear, you know, "I'm the fucking man," and you know, hear "Motto," everyone's gonna be like, "Oh shit!"
And on 25,
now I could groove with this shit. They're gonna sing it. You can start taking the words out.
And your reaction.
You know what I'm saying?
Oh shit.
shit.
Man, I haven't seen him, but I haven't seen anybody fucking catch a groove like that in a long time. Like,
right?
Oh, shit. But
that's, that's that uncle, like. Yeah.
That's, that cookout, that's that cookout like reaction.
Can you imagine these young kids going like, oh, shit. Yeah.
Yo, Cricket caught the holy soul.
Taste like
I do that shit, though. When I hear something good in the club and the DJ does something good, I still get amped. Yeah.
Yo,
I could be talking to, I could be having a serious conversation with somebody.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I'd be like, yo, Jamie, you got to, I'd be like, oh, shit.
Cricket does this face, he's like, oh, shit. Did you see what he just did? I'm like, yeah. That's
he's like,
cool.
He would be telling me a story how he just went to the hospital. I'm like, damn, that's fucked up. And I'm like, wait, ooh.
Hold on. Almost like you gave up on things like,
I give a fuck about your blood pressure.
I'm telling you, like, yo, that's the stage we are in hip hop where the new songs, the beats are good, the hooks are good, but the verses aren't carrying it for some reason.
Again, that's why mashups are back, because it's it has that factor where you rather hear Model lyrics on the fucking Jack Harlow.
Yeah.
Because it's so...
And the crazy thing is, like, I love the J.I.D. verse.
Yeah.
It's not even the fact that I think
it's
his
verse
is whack.
It's not a bad verse. It's not a bad verse.
Just in the club, it doesn't carry for some reason. Like, you still... It's look, the clubs have become more karaoke than ever.
Yeah.
I could be wrong.
Sing along.
Yeah.
No, I think it's karaoke. It's literally every song you play has to be a karaoke song. Like that, I've told people, they're like, how's the room? I'm like, it's karaoke. They're like, what do you mean? That means every fucking song has to be sing-along.
Yeah.
Yep.
There's a dance to it.
It doesn't matter. He's like, well, what genre? I'm like, any genre.
Yeah.
As long as it's fucking a karaoke song that you can sing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You're coming out, like, all the bookers and the managers would say, they're like, play sing-alongs, something recognizable.
Yeah.
The crowd singing.
Yep.
So.
I kept hearing that term, too, sing-along.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, just... That's why, like, you know, some of the newer songs, I mean, it kind of sucks because there's some good songs out there.
But, potentially good songs, yes.
But until, like, you know, it's deemed, like, singing worthy, for the whole room to be unified and sing along to it, like, yo, we have to hold on to that. That's why, like, a headlining, like, honestly, that's the difference right now. It's like, if I have a headline set and I'm opening for a headliner, I'm staying away from karaoke songs.
Right.
To a certain degree. Right. Or I'm like, I'm going to play some of this cooler shit and keep the vibe going or keep the energy, keep it dancing, but I'm going to save them those karaoke moments so they can hit that shit. So honestly, openers, if you're opening for headliners, stay away from the karaoke songs. Stop, like, everyone's
make sure they don't know all the words. Most of the words is good. Yeah. All the words, stay away from it.
Everyone's obsessed with, like, the year of songs. Like, as a headline to opening set, if you're bringing up the year of songs for opening and headlining sets, you don't know what you're doing.
Yeah.
More than ever now, you don't know what you're doing. Yeah. If you're coming to me and being like, "There's like, I just played a bunch of old shit, play some new shit," I'm going to look at them like, what the fuck are you talking about?
What does that mean?
Like, fam, what are you talking about? I would get really heated.
That was the comment section off of that video. It was like, you really stressing about a song that's 13 years old? I'm like, it has nothing to do with the time it came out or what year it dropped.
You saying that just tells me everything about who you are as a DJ.
Yeah.
Yep.
Because that's the last thing I would say to anybody. Yo, that song is fucking old. Like, were you stressing, you know? Like, and I'd be like, 14 years old?
What Gimme is older than all of us.
And that shit
is Mobama
at
128.
How old is Murder on the Dance Floor?
Oh, that's man, true. That is a bit... Oh,
that's what I'm saying. Like, yo, suck a dick. Like, what are you talking about?
Yep.
Damn.
You don't know what...
That's the difference between earbuds and us. Huh?
I'm like, my God.
Fam, you don't... Like, we're in different rooms. So if you know we're in different rooms, don't say anything. Or share what's going on in your rooms.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. Educate me. But you telling me something like that tells me everything about what you know about DJing and where you are in DJing.
Right.
Right.
It's just
right.
Like, you don't know anything that's going on right now. If we are in the same rooms and you bring up years, I'm going to be like, you really don't know what the fuck's going on.
Right.
Seriously.
No, that was a crossover song too.
Which one?
No Hands. It was a big crossover song. So
yeah,
like,
of course.
Yeah. Like, they don't realize that, like, there's only a certain amount of crossover songs from hip hop nowadays. because now it's becoming so segmented where like they're going up on the indie rap scene, the SoundCloud rapper scene, like that didn't necessarily cross over into the mainstream. So like you're limited to those as a headliner.
I mean, there's certain songs that we need to unify room.
Yep. Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Especially if we're going on EDM, you know, reggaeton, dembow, house dance, you know, top 40, you know, trap, you know, like, yeah, you know, jiggy hip hop.
The hits are the hits. Within all those genres. Undoubtable. You have to play
but it's
those.
Just, no in doubt certain it. Rooms, there's only certain songs that can unify room and you can like, yo, because look, as DJs, we all kind of want to go a little more left.
Right.
And we always take it maybe a little further than we should.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
Like, that's the fun of it. Let me see if I can go, pause, let me go deeper and see if they know
yeah.
this.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And if we lose them, then we can go back to those songs and like, let me bring them back. And
yeah.
But you have, that's your crutch. That's your emergency button.
Yeah. And then someone said something really important. I think it was Kaz from Miami. He said, look, those type of songs are most effective when you hear it for the first time. No hands hearing it the second time doesn't hit as hard.
Yeah. Oh, right.
You know what I mean?
In the same night.
In the same night. Right. Yeah. You know right. what I'm saying? So like, oh, Leo, will you play the song again? And be like, yeah, but it's not the same when you hear it the second time.
Right.
Yeah.
You right. know?
You're more like, why is this DJ playing this shit again? And it sounds off. It sounds like you don't have your shit together.
But once again, right. that's like a way for people to deflect and not be accountable for just being a bad opener.
Yeah.
Right.
Not necessarily being a bad DJ. You're a bad opener.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, I always tell them, you should be headlining. 100%.
we should have switched shifts. Yeah. I would have much rather been on my couch by now. But
since we're in these positions.
And I have to deal with your shit.
You know what I'm saying?
I had that moment for the first time not long ago. I was like, oh, this guy should have headlined.
Like, I'd have been like, well, now I'm going to do your set now.
Yeah.
The set you
like,
should have done
now. Why are you playing
DT
at 10:30?
Yeah.
And this shit is, I'm like, thanks, bro. Appreciate it.
Why are you doing flooring? You should have been doing drywall.
Yeah. You should have told me to open for
your
you.
Your flooring is awful. Why are you doing flooring?
Yeah.
You're well, they're making me start with flooring. Well, then you better start you're getting good at it.
Yeah.
Because I'm doing drywall.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. I'm doing the headlining set.
Yeah, know? For real. I'll just like, I'm just going to do your opening set now and in the headlining slot because I mean, that's what you left me with.
Here's the best way I can represent it. Every time I go to San Francisco, I go to the Bay and I DJ. If there's an opener, the opener plays a bunch of Bay Area shit that I've never fucking heard.
Right.
And it goes the fuck off.
Yes.
And I always learn from that shit and I take notes.
Yeah.
And I'm just kind of like, yo, that was fucking dope. And then I'll go on and I'll incorporate certain shit, but, you know, and I'll do what, you know. But for me to go to the Bay and have the DJ play, like, No Hands and do a Down South set and do all of this, and I would think they would represent their city and like, kind of show me what's going on in a city.
Kind of guy
in an opening set a little bit. Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
But do you find let's just say the Bay Area, because the Bay Area is like very big on Bay Area music.
Yeah.
When the opener's doing like Bay Area hits that you may or may not know, and that goes off, do you find that when you do like national hits, it doesn't go off like what he did, like the opener did?
Well, like, look, there are Bay Area songs that hit way harder and they have more legs and they're older. But I would never play that kind of in a headlining set. I could, for example, like Gas Pedal, right? Mm-hmm. You could do like a whole Sage the Gemini set.
Right.
And it'll go the fuck off in the Bay. But that represents the city.
Right.
And it shows me, it sets the tone of like, yo, I'm in the Bay.
Right.
Yep. You feel me? Whereas like if I just do like, you know, if I'm opening and I'm playing like Jack Harlow and like Sexy Red, that shows me no representation of what city I'm in.
Yeah.
Okay.
If I go to New York and someone's doing an opening set and you hear like more New York bangers, you're hearing like certain things that go off in New York or certain songs that like kind of deep dive. Like I remember I walked in and the opener was playing 112, you know, Only You, and then going into other like New York shit, like Change Clothes or something. And it was sexy. And it was like, and to me, it represented New York. I'm like,
yeah.
Yo, I'm in New York.
Yeah.
This is fucking dope. And then it's kind of sets the tone for me to be like, all right, so like, this is where we're going tonight. I could play a bunch of hits,
right?
But I could deep dive into some New York shit.
Yeah.
But when you're just playing the hits, that are like national hits,
yeah,
it doesn't represent the city I'm in. And it actually disappoints me because I'm like, damn, like, this is kind of like, you know, this is what y'all do out here? Like, if I go to Atlanta, I would assume they would be playing some Atlanta deep cuts that would, I would just be like, oh shit,
yep,
this is fucking dope.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? If I go down south, wow, they're playing Rod Spinners, or they're playing like, you know, Young Jeezy, like early Young Jeezy, or like Lil Flip or some crazy shit. Or if I'm like, yo, they going off, they doing some.
Yeah.
Yep.
Or, you know, like they're playing some, like they're playing some early Cash Money shit, shit's going off or whatever, or some Nolla, you know what I'm saying? Nolla Bounce and it's going off. I'm just like, yo, it sets the tone for where I'm at, the city I'm in. And, you know, it doesn't necessarily have to be hip hop. It could be just,
right,
you know, any type of genre that represents that, that's key to that city, that I get an idea of like, okay, this is where we're going in that city. That's a stellar opener.
Yeah.
They're showing you a blueprint.
Yeah.
And they're saying like, hey, you can, you know, when they're going through all these genres in different pockets, they're kind of showing you like, this is what you can do on a headliner scale.
Yeah.
That's a like great that. Opener. A great opener thinks that way, where it's like, oh, these are where you can go. And it's that, I remember I did live, and Jessica Hu was spinning. She was playing King Floyd Groove Me in Live, and it was going to fuck off. And then she went into some electro, and then she went into Justice, and all this. I was so like, I didn't want to like DJ, I wanted to like listen to her more. And then the place had a great energy and it was killing. And I was just like, wow, like I could go almost anywhere with this shit. And it's like, you know, I thought it was one, to this day, one of like the top 10 opening sets or sets I've ever heard.
But she's also showing you how wide you can get.
How wide. And just like, just kind of showing you like, yo, you could do this, you could do that. And it was amazing.
Right.
Yeah.
I get that.
Yeah. But it's like, you know, you have to know. Like how to really, you have to know the room and you have to really know how to tease it and just like work it. But, you know, we're done with this. Yeah, before we leave in the podcast, I want to thank you for the bag of coffee
over here. Dude, nice. Absolutely.
For your Beans, Rhymes, and Life.
Yes.
This emerged because of your Twitch, right?
Yes, it did. It was, it's actually my... My side hustle, soon to be main hustle.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I was just trying to figure out something that I can like come out of the pandemic and kind of expand on outside of, you know, if my music career slows down, like
you leave
this was another one of my passions was coffee.
Nice. This is called Chanel?
Yeah. So each roast is actually named after a song that I enjoy. So Chanel was actually a Frank Ocean song.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Peach, apricot, sweet cherry, and chocolate. Wow. Impressive.
Yeah, it's for you and Mama Crooked.
Yeah, yeah.
So.
Dope, man. I appreciate this.
Absolutely.
And they can get this, what, on the website?
Yes, at brlcoffeeco.com.
Amazing.
Yeah, thank
you. I'll let you know how it is.
Yes.
I think Alex bought some of your coffee.
Yes. Yeah. Thank you.
He just said it was a little expensive. He said it was really good.
Yeah, it's too pricey.
I mean.
He said Whole Foods.
Maybe it's not expensive and you're just buying shit.
On that note.
Yeah, maybe the other stuff in the past. Terrible.
Marco Penta, Neil Jackson, thanks for coming through. Neil, thank you so much.
Dude,
I'm glad we got to do this, brother.
Dude, thank you. Right. Appreciate you guys. Thank you.
Thanks for tuning into the Road Podcast. Don't forget, every Wednesday we have new episodes on all major streaming platforms. And every Thursday, the video versions go up on our YouTube page. Please subscribe to our channel, youtube.com/Road Podcast. And to find exclusive clips of the pod, please visit youtube.com/DJ City. And we'll see you next Wednesday.